Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Pola sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. This is your host, Sean, and thanks for checking out the show. Today we're going to have a pretty short show. We're going to talk about the upcoming NFL draft. We're going to talk Cubs opening day roster, a little bit of Bulls, a little bit of Blackhawks. But first, let's start with our sponsors. First is up is the Rockford Ice Hogs. Next home game is Wednesday, March 25th. Versus the Lake Erie Monsters. Puck drop is at 7 p.m. The Ice Hogs finish off a season-long four-game homestand during another WXRX Dollar Day at the BMO. Fans can enjoy $1 hot dogs, sodas, beers, and companion tickets throughout the night. The matchup is the last of eight meetings between the Ice Hogs and the Monsters this year. Rockford holds a 4-2-1 record over their Midwest Division rival, including a 2-0-1 mark at home. So make sure you check out the Ice Hogs, only 90 minutes from Chicago, super fan-friendly, family-friendly, icehogs.com. Our other sponsor is audible.com. If you head over to audible.com/swirskysports, you'll get to download one free audiobook of your choice. There's Tales of the Chicago Blackhawks Locker Room, a collection of the greatest Blackhawks stories ever told. Stories from the original years all the way up to the 2010 Stanley Cup. If football is more your speed, Monsters, the 1985 Chicago Bears and the Wild Heart of Football. Or the amazing Michael Jordan, The Life. The absolute end-all be-all of Michael Jordan biographies and one of the greatest biographies of all time. Check out any one of these or any other 100,000 other titles for free by going to audible.com/swirskysports. So we've taken care of that. First, I guess we're 2 weeks away from opening day of baseball for the Cubs, and I've been watching Cubs news. It's spring training. I'm just a little bit bored at this point because I want the season to start already. I want there to be actual meaningful games. I want the distractions of all the stuff that's going on to be over. What I'm talking about is Chris Bryant. Chris Bryant is a great player. From every single game he's played for the Chicago Cubs, he's just been a great player through every level of the organization. But guess what? It's a baseball decision and a financial decision the Cubs are making to hold him down for a couple of weeks and then bring him up. That's the fact. He is batting ridiculously high. He's batting nearly .500 with an over 2 OPS. I believe he's leading all of baseball in home runs. But guess what? It doesn't matter. No matter what, the Baseball Players Union's upset. Scott Boras is upset. Everybody's talking about it. Just stop. It's going to happen regardless of what everyone thinks. There's no speculation. It's debating about whether the moon is going to come up, the stars are going to shine. It's going to happen. So we have to look at what's going to be the opening day roster for the Cubs. The starting lineup. Just skimming through, it seems pretty much given what we're going to get in the outfield. Dexter Fowler at center field, Soler in right. Coughlin in left. I think that's a given. I don't think there's any debate about that. Rizzo at first, that's a lock. Castro at short, that's a lock. Montero at catcher, that's a lock. And then I think it's pretty much a lock at this point what the starting five in the rotation is going to be. We're looking at Lester, Arrieta, Jason Hamill, Travis Wood, and Kyle Hendricks. I'm fairly positive that that's your five. Barring any sort of freak injuries or or John Lester's dead arm, continue to be a lingering problem. So the big question is a couple of things. Is one is who plays third, two, who plays second, and three, when Bryant does come up, where does he play? For as amazing and game day ready as Bryant's bat is, he's not ready to be as a third baseman as far as a fielding player. He's not MLB ready. And the issue with the Cubs is they're a young team. They're on the upswing. And to win some of these close games, you need a top-notch defensive team. Watching the playoffs is teams that have solid team defense tend to win games because it's close games in the postseason. And it's those teams that are going to win those close games in the regular season to get to the postseason, because baseball's a really tight sport for the most part. What separate over 162 game season, things shouldn't be as close as they really are. So you really need to have a good defensive team, and you are suspect when you're the Cubs, because Castro is a suspect fielding shortstop. Rizzo's all right. Montero's a good catcher. Outfield, you're average. And at third base, if you bring Bryant up, you're suspect there. So where is he going to play? Are you going to put him in the outfield? Then the problem with that is you displace somebody. You've got Dexter Fowler, who you just traded for and you're paying good money for. Soler, who is equally deserved of a shot in the big leagues. And Chris Coughlin, who was a top three hitter for you last year. And so you want all those bats in the lineup. So do you put a platoon out there, or do you put him at third and have him play through these errors and play through the suspect defense and his mediocre play at actual third base? So that's a big question mark, is where he comes up and plays. It could be a situation where he plays different positions around baseball. Maybe plays a little bit of third, a little bit of outfield in spots, just so his bat's in the lineup every day. Then the other question is, who plays third opening day? Right now, the obvious choices are Mike Old or Tommy La Stella, because they've mentioned his name a bunch at third base. I'm going to go probably Mike Old. He's going to be that placeholder until Chris Bryant comes up. And then second is you've still got your option of Javi Baez, who was the favorite going in, but he's just stinking up the joint again in spring training. It's the guy has so much natural born talent, but he can't lay off bad pitches. I mean, looking at his strikeout rate, it's just phenomenal. I can't believe that the guy strikes out that much. So what do you do? What do you do if you're the Cubs? Do you take a Javi Baez and let him struggle in the majors? I don't know. I mean, if it's me, I probably send him down to AAA. Let him get some more seasoning down there. Let him get some more bats. Let him get more comfortable. Work on him with him every day, where the at-bats don't particularly matter. You're just trying to get better as an organization. Let Arismendi Alcantara, let him play second. He came up as a second baseman. You played him in the outfield last year just to get him in the lineup. Keep him up. Let him play second base.
That leaves you with Tommy La Stella to play a position like the utility position. He can either fill in at third, which he just came out yesterday or the day before to say that he was comfortable playing, Alcantara playing second base, and La Stella filling in whenever he needs to at second base as well. That gives you some breathing room too, because you have Michael that can also play third, and Bryant coming up in a few weeks. So as a whole, you've got this roster pretty much making itself. You just have a few random question marks. Who's going to fill in? Where are you going to fit this third catcher? Because you traded for Ross to be Lester's battery mate. You've got Montero, who's going to be your everyday guy. What do you do with Wellington Castillo? You're not going to just dump him. And You haven't been able to trade him yet. Your options are pretty much wait till somebody gets hurt and hope that you can get rid of him. But he's also a valuable enough piece that you don't want to just let him walk either. So those are the things coming up. So it's a lot of the question marks have been answered. The last one being, you know, what do you do with Javi Baez? Like we said, it's a position where you've got to send him down. He's just struggling too much, and it really hinders you from being able to proceed how you want to proceed as a baseball club if he's striking out so much. Let him go through those struggles with meaningless at-bats in Iowa. Moving on to the Bulls, this is a team that is in desperate need of some reinforcements. And luckily enough, I'm recording the show right now. I've got the Bulls game on in the background and the Blackhawks game as well. Jimmy Butler is back. Thank goodness. We've got Taj in a limited capacity. We got Jimmy Buckets back. It's finally... Finally, you're starting to get back from some of the injuries. And from what I'm reading is Derrick Rose is actually able to play a little bit of contact basketball. That's a good sign as well. We talked about it before. This is a situation where this is a team that has a lot of talent, a lot of depth, and they've really needed a lot of their depth because they went a long stretch without Dunleavy, a long stretch without Taj Gibson. They had Gasol out. Jimmy Butler was out for several weeks. You had... Doug McDermott out for several weeks. You had Noah out for a while. You had Rose out for a while. Like, everybody has been on a serious injury bug, and you've had a serious injury for everybody. Most teams just can't handle that, and the Bulls are still 42-29, and they're really struggling as of late. They had a big lead against Detroit the other night and just got bombed in the fourth quarter. That's what you're going to get when you got older players. You've got a lot of injuries, which makes your depth really tests your depth, and they weren't able to hang on or come back. So this is a team that, you know, is in desperate need of some reinforcements, and tonight they're up by a few against the Hornets, which is not a very good team, but they at least they got Jimmy Butler back, and it's given them a little bit of a boost. As it stands right now, the Bulls are in that fourth position, which is one I don't like them in because they're just barely ahead of Washington. And so they match up with Washington. If the playoffs were to start today, you've had the Chicago with home court advantage against Washington. And we saw what happens. Sure, Washington isn't the same team as they were last year, but the Bulls still have a heck of a time struggling against these scoring big men, and Washington's got two. That's not a good matchup. If anything, if they can move up their half game out of that third position with Toronto, if they can win this game, move up into that third position and play Milwaukee in the first round, that's a much better matchup because they just really crush Miami. And you've got... So as it stands right now, is Atlanta's a lock for that first seed. They're up by 8 games over Cleveland, and they're just really, I mean, they're on a little bit of a spin right now with a 30-game losing streak, but they've got that first that first seed locked up, especially when they've already played 70 games. They've only got 12 games left to play and an 8-game lead. They would really have to have some sort of epic collapse in order to not get that first seed. Cleveland's pretty much locked into that second seed right now. They're 3 games ahead of Toronto, 3.5 ahead of the Bulls. They're 8-2 over their last 10. So really, the realistic places where the Bulls are going to land, they're going to make the playoffs. They're 10.5 games into the playoff race. So there's another catastrophic type thing would have to happen for the Bulls to not make the playoffs. And realistically, they're ahead of the 6th seed. They're 7.5 games. So that's another epic collapse to fall out of it. So realistically, you're looking at the Bulls either being number 3, number 4, number 5. And if it stood right now, if they're the number 3 seed, they're playing Milwaukee. If they're the 4 seed, they're playing Washington. 5 seed, they're playing Washington. So realistically, right now, we're looking at them playing Washington, and that's not a good matchup. Things are going to have to go the Bulls' way as far as health. They're going to need to get everybody healthy, and they're going to need some luck with the way things fall out and in order to progress into the playoffs. I mean, I think they've got a good team, but that first series is really going to be a doozy, I think, with what they're going to have to do. Is we win that first series, it's going to give them some confidence. It's going to give them that boost to be able to go on into that second round. If they come out struggling, it's going to be over early, because this is a team that has a lot of talent, can beat anybody in the league, but they've also a team that can flop and lose to a Philadelphia or a New York. That's just the way it is. And that New York team is terrible. They're 2-8 in their last 10 and 14-56 on the season. Really right now we're just in a holding position, trying to hang on to our position while the guys get healthy. You know, Jimmy Butler's finally back tonight. Noah's out tonight. Rose is out tonight. Hopefully those guys are back soon. One last thing I want to talk about before we get into an NFL draft and the Chicago Bears is the Blackhawks. The Blackhawks, I mean, it's funny. It's like one show we talk about them and they're reeling. One show we're talking about them and they're on fire. Next show, they're reeling. The next show, on fire. Patrick Kane gets hurt. We're doom and gloom. This team, it's funny. They have gone on some pretty cold streaks and they've gone on some nice hot streaks. But this is a really talented team. This is a Stanley Cup champion team. And I believe that the Vegas odds are that they're the favorite to win the Stanley Cup. And over their last 10, they're 7-2-1. They had that one fluke loss to the Stars the other night. But other than that, they've been playing phenomenally. They're scoring some goals. They're back to playing good team defense. They're back to playing good team defense. That top line is on fire with Taves, Sharp, and Hossa. You've got Teuvo Teravainen is playing really well. And it's something we knew he could do. He is definitely a top 6 guy. And he's just playing really well. He's showing those instincts that he has. He's still a little bit of a liability on defense, but he's at least got an active stick, and he's trying. That second line is a nice line, too. They got Saad, Vermette, and Teuvo Teravainen. Brad Richards, the nice thing about those moves that they made is you're not stuck with Andrew Shaw as a center. It really pushes everybody up. Taves is your definite number one center, your first line center. Vermette moves right into the second line center position, something that the Hawks have desperately needed for years. And then that pushes Brad Richards out of that second line center spot and pushes him into that third line center. And it forces him to play better to meet these expectations. And then that sort of pushes Marcus Krueger, who is just a worker. Love Marcus Krueger. And you get that. So you've got 4 centers that are really pushing each other and really trying to push to make their lines better. So you've got the Taves. Taves' line is playing great with Taves, Sharp, Hossa. Then Vermette, Saad, Teravainen playing well. And Bickle's just been a albatross out there for a long time now, and he got benched the other day. And that's Coach Q's way of saying, like, hey, listen, you're playing like crap. He doesn't call guys out in the media. He does a healthy scratch on you. He's done it to Versteeg. He's done it to Bickle. And usually these guys respond that they're going, hey, listen, I think I'm playing bad. Everybody else notices I'm playing bad. I need to step up. It's the way of letting them know. And I don't know if that works for everybody, but Bickle and Versteeg seem to play a lot better after they've been a healthy scratch. Then that fourth line, you got Nordstrom, Shaw, and Kruger. And what's nice about that is these are young, hungry guys. Shaw's trying to prove that he's not a fourth line guy. Playing the wing position, it lets him to be a guy with less of those center responsibilities. It allows him to play his game a little bit better, which is allowing him a little bit more freedom. Nordstrom's just a worker as well. So is Kruger. So I like that line because they're willing to do whatever you need it to. If it's a physical team and they need to go out there and bang on their first line a little bit or just play physical, that's what they do. If you need them to play defense, that's what they do. If you need them to score, they're going to try to score. That they're just a line that's going to go out there and do what you need them to do. And that's what they're a blue-collar fourth line. And that's what you really need. And it's also nice because the way they're playing is you don't have to have Carcillo in there every night. And then the defensive pairings has just been, they've been playing a lot better as well. You put Oduya and Hjalmarsson back together, and you got Kimmo Tiininen in there, who's, the nice thing about him is he's older, he's not as fast as he was, but he's not David Rundblad. And that's always a positive, because David Rundblad's terrible. And I get it, he's a Coach Q guy. I get it that some of these other guys, like Adam Klendening and Klaas Dahlbeck, that were at Rockford, even though I think they're much more talented than David Rundblad, they're not Coach Q guys. They had to go, unfortunately, because there's no room for them. Coach Q will bury them. So you end up with your first pairings, the Tiininen and Seabrook, then Keith Roosevelt, and then the Oduya Hjalmarsson. They've been playing so much better. It seems like they've figured out who they are and how they fit together. And as much as the Keith Seabrook line has been, repairing has been good for the last few years, Seabrook has a lot of mental lapses, so it's good to put him with a 40-year-old veteran that's just rock solid. I mean, he's not the same talented guy he was before as far as his skill level, but mentally he's got it all up there, and he's seen everything you can throw at him. So you just have them finally clicking on all cylinders, which is good because they've played 71 games so far. Only an 82-game schedule, so we're winding down to the end of the season. Playoffs are right around the corner. I mean, they're playing right now against the Hurricanes. They're playing Wednesday versus the Flyers, Friday against the Blue Jackets, and then their last game is April 11th, Saturday, against the Avalanche. They've got some tough games ahead of them. They've got the Jets coming up later this week. Next week, they start off with the Kings. They've got the Canucks. They've got the Blues. They've got the Wild. They got the Blues again. There are some tough games in there. These are games that they're going to have to win to position themselves. As it stands right now, they're looking at playing Nashville in that first series, and that's not a bad position to be in, but you would like to have the home ice advantage going into that series. So right now, they're four points away from being tied with Nashville. Hopefully after tonight, they're only two games back. But they're only 5 points up on Minnesota and 6 points up on Winnipeg, who are those wildcard teams. So those teams are right up behind you. Granted, there's only 11 games left, but if you struggle against the Kings, you struggle against, you've got a game against the Wild, you've got a game against the Jets. If you don't win those games, suddenly though that 6-point lead becomes a 4-point lead, a 2-point lead, and they're really breathing down your neck. Do I think that they're not going to make the playoffs? No, I don't think that at all. I think they're more likely to move into the second position than get knocked out of the playoffs. But there's still that that worry that they could very well, really really hurt themselves as far as their positioning. You don't want to be a wild card team because you're going to have to play that tough St. Louis team in St. Louis. It's not a good position to be in. But this is a tough division they play in. I mean, St. Louis, they're, if they win their next game, they'll be tied for best record in the Western Conference. Nashville's only 1 point behind them. Blackhawks are odds on favorite to win the division. And then you've got Minnesota and Winnipeg. They're the current wild card teams. So you've got the reigning Stanley Cup champions in the Los Angeles Kings. They're looking from the outside in. And they're 4 points. They're 4 points out of the playoffs right now. Well, 4 points out of the wild card, and they're 2 points out of that last position. And so their real shot is to actually be a top three in their the Pacific Division. But Calgary's been playing tough as of late. They're 6-2-2 in their last 10. But like I said, the Blackhawks are clicking at the right time because you've got Minnesota and Winnipeg hot on your trails, and St. Louis and Nashville. Well, St. Louis is not really slowing down. Nashville had a little bit of a stumble, but they're too good of a team. They're playing too well to falter too much. So if you're the Blackhawks, you really can't let your foot off the gas at this point. You're looking at playoff type hockey from now until that the playoffs are over for you. There's too few of games. I mean, with how many multi-point games there are in the league lately, is the teams that are right behind you can easily, even though they lose, get a point, and those points quickly add up and they catch fire. And like I said, they've got a couple games against the Blues, they've got the Jets, they've got the Kings, they've got the Wild. There's not too many easy games in there. You've got Buffalo in there, but that's just a terrible team, but that's a team that also beat you once this season. So, really, it's we've got them finally clicking good on defense. The goaltending is back to playing on point. I think having Scott Darling up there is a much better option than Antti Raanta. And I like Antti Raanta. I don't think he's a bad goalie. I think that Scott Darling has just found his groove right now. And even though he's technically not that good of a goalie, watching him play, he's just... he makes the stops. And part of it is he's a big, athletic, tall guy. And he looks kind of gangly out there making the saves, but the point is he's making the saves. Watching a guy like Jonathan Quick make saves, he makes them look easy. And Scott Darling makes them look a little bit more hard. And it makes you hold your breath a little bit more. But it doesn't matter as long as you stop those pucks from going in and you're winning the games. And I think Scott Darling provides that a lot more of a comfort level for the team than Antti Raanta, and I think it makes Corey Crawford a better goalie. So that's really all I'm going to talk about with hockey. And again, I said this is a quick show. The last thing we're going to talk about is the NBA or the NFL draft and the Chicago Bears and free agency. So every week I go through one position and I talk about all those players. And this week, there's been a lot of stuff going on, and I didn't get as far as I wanted, so I'm not going to talk about any position this week. And I'm almost at the end anyway. We're coming up on the draft in just a few short weeks, but I gave some leeway in how I did it. So I have room to bump myself a week and still get everything done before the NFL draft. So instead, I'm going to break down with what, if the season were to start today, who I think would be the starting team, where I think their biggest needs are, and kind of rank those and talk about how they can fill those. And I'm going to talk about my first mock draft. I don't like to do a lot of mock drafts. I don't do it for the whole NFL because think about it, guys like Mel Kiper and those guys that they do these mock drafts, they do it for every team. And I'm a huge Bears fan and I watch a lot of Bears games and I feel like I'm really in touch with what they're going to do and what they need. And I look at another team and sure, I can give some sort of vague prediction of what I think they're going to go with, but it's really hard. It's really hard to know what another team is going to do because you invest so much time and energy into one. And these guys are doing it for 32 teams for 7 rounds. And then you end up looking at your teams like you know, you look at your team's draft where you only see what they picked for your team, and then you kind of pull your, they scratch your head, and you're like, what the hell were they thinking? You know, Danny Shelton in the first round, you know, why are they going to do this? That doesn't make any sense. So I don't like to do it for other teams because it just makes me look silly. I just do it for my team. So I will go through a four-round mock. Doesn't make sense to do 5, 6, and 7. It's, you're just really going to get athletes at that point who do you think could be a good special teamer, and then maybe they work out of the position. But let's start out with who's going to be the starter. That's the big question now. Who's the starters if we start the season? It's easy on the offense, I think, a little bit easier. We're looking at three wide receivers. It's Marquise Wilson, I think, is one of the top three receivers they have. Eddie Royal, Alshon Jeffrey. I think, as it stands, that's where you're at, is your top three receivers. Royal's a good slot receiver. Wilson will give you a little bit of speed. Jeffrey is that big possession type receiver. Tight end, Martellus Bennett, that's a given. Jay Cutler at quarterback, Matt Forte at running back. Then where you get a little bit tricky is, what about the offensive line? I mean, it's easy to say it's going to be the same five as it was last year. Bushrod, Slauson, Garza, Long, and Mills. But Mills has been that big weak link. I mean, if you're looking at what this team could do, the obvious choice is you've got a lot of position or a lot more flexibility at guard. Why do you need two dominant guards? It's Slauson and Long. Is Long is your best offensive lineman. Why not kick him out and play left tackle? And I'm not saying they're going to do this. It's just one school of thought. Is you kick Long out and let him play left tackle. Move Bushrod over to right tackle. You move Slauson into the guard position. Garza at center. And then you have competition up for that other guard spot. But I think the more realistic thing is you've got a Pro Bowl guard in Long, and you've got a Pro Bowl caliber guy in Matt Slauson. Bushrod, he'll be fine. I think he'll be better than he was last year. Draft another right tackle. You've positioned yourself where you've got more flexibility. I think you draft a right tackle and let him compete with Jordan Mills to make that right side better. Honestly, I think that's what they do. But as it stands right now, probably you're looking at the same starting five. Defense. I think you have Antrell Roll, Ryan Mundy, the former Giant tag team, being your safeties. Tim Jennings and Kyle Fuller at your cornerbacks. And then that's where it gets a little tricky too, is you've got Pernell McPhee is going to be one of your 3-4 outside linebackers. And it's hard to predict that other one is, as it stands right now, is who's, you ask yourself, who's your best pass rushing out there? And I think it's going to either be Willie Young or Jared Allen. Are those guys that can drop back? I don't know. But those are your best pass rushers. So I think it's one of those two guys. And I'm going to say Jared Allen. He's you owe him too much money to cut. He'd just be so much dead money. Unless you can trade him. So I think you got to put Jared Allen in there and have him be your other outside linebacker. And then your defensive ends, your 3-4 defensive ends. I think you have Lamar Houston. I think you have Jeremiah Ratliff. And Ego Ferguson being your nose tackle. You hear a lot about Chicago announcers and NFL experts talk about how these 3-4 defensive ends, that's a non-glorious position, and it's really just a big fat guy who's eating spots. And they talk about a two-gap technique. Let me just break this down to you for you for a second. Is there's a lot of unknowns of what's going to happen with this Bears defense. And you've got head coach and John Fox, who's a 4-3 defensive guy, and you've got Vic Fangio, who's a 3-4 guy, but he's very flexible in what he can do. Yeah. So why traditionally what a 3-4 defense is you've basically got the nose tackle, but they call it a two-gap system. So your defensive ends, they each take two two gaps. So they have the gap on either side of the tackle and between the guard and the center and then the tackle out. And then you've got your nose tackle who's taking the gap on either side of the center. And then your two middle linebackers step up as well, which leaves your what should be your best pass rushers, athletic guys, and your 3-4 outside linebackers to rush the quarterback. You should have some sort of open man to you, like you're going to send more guys that can be blocked, and you're going to get the sack or stop the run. But then there's also the one gap defense where you have much more athletic pass rushing guys that can penetrate in, and the penetration is going to cause a breakdown of the offensive blocking scheme. And I really think that the Bears have much more, would have better luck because of the players they have in the system playing this one gap, because they don't have these huge road grading big fat guys to play the two gap system. But what they do have is a guy in Lamar Houston who's 300 pounds and can rush the passer from a defensive end position. But he can also play a nose tackle or a defensive tackle position in a 4-3, played both. You could put him as a 3-4 defensive end. And then you've got Jay Ratliff, who, again, he was mostly a defensive tackle, but he was a quick penetrator guy. I think he could play the other defensive end. And Ego Ferguson is a big fat slob, and he could play that nose tackle position, I think, well. And then that leaves you Jared Allen, McPhee out there to rush the passers. And your middle linebackers, the inside linebackers, I think Christian Jones and John Bostic as it stands right now. So where does that leave us with needs? Where do we need to upgrade to make this a really fantastic team? Because as it stands right now, they're not a fantastic team. This is a team that was terrible last year and terrible the year before. So what do you need to make this a better team? And I'm not saying that right now they wouldn't be a competitive team, because you put all of, there was talent last year. They just weren't put in a position to win, and they had a lot of guys that gave up. So if you have a coaching staff that knows what they're doing and can put you in a position to win, put you in a system that can win, put the best players out there to be in the position to win, and put those players in the best position to win, and teach them the right way, you're going to have a better outcome. But you still need to have talent. You need to close that talent gap with the New Englands, the Green Bays, the Seattles, and you're really far behind as far as the talent level goes. Those teams just go out and get better. They sign their own free agents, they sign smart contracts, and they retool. You're like, well, Seattle should have won the Super Bowl if they would have handed it off to Beast Mode. They go out and get Jimmy Graham. What the hell is that? How is that? That's the rich getting richer. So if you're the Bears, you've got to close that talent gap. And you've only got 6 draft picks this year, so you've got to utilize that free agency. You've got $9 million to spend, and you've got some key pieces that you could get rid of to free up a little bit of money. But you need a better center. Roberto Garza is long in the tooth. He signed to a 1-year deal. Can he play this year if you need him to? Yeah, absolutely. But would you be better served with somebody that's younger, better, and makes less money? Absolutely. So you need a center. And then you need to fill in that fifth offensive line position, whether that be you kick out Long to play, kick out Kyle Long to play tackle, then you need another guard, so be it. Or if you leave him where he is and you decide you need a right tackle, then you need to go out and get a right tackle. But you need that one of those positions to be a starter. Center is a position that it's a position of want, not need. But I think that fifth offensive line spot is a position of need and not want. So you need to get better in that fifth position if you think you're going to win. You need at least one really solid inside linebacker. I think Christian Jones is a guy that people like. John Bostic's not it. And I don't think he's going to be the starter on opening game. Whether it be Mason Foster, who they've been linked to, or they draft somebody, they need another inside linebacker. And if they get two, I wouldn't be upset, because I don't know what Christian Jones is fully capable of. We'll see. But they need at least one inside linebacker. And honestly, I think they need that they would be better served with a really good outside linebacker to play opposite Pernell McPhee. I think Jared Allen is fine playing him on certain pass rushing downs, but I don't think he's the answer. Willie Young, I think he's a guy that you can put in there in rotation, but I think you just need an elite guy to be out there to go out there and rush that passer, because you've got Aaron Rodgers and you've got Matt Stafford, and you don't have the corners and the safeties to cover all their wide receivers and their weapons and the Megatrons out there. But what you do have, what you could do, is you could close that window of time that they have to get the pass off. If you give 4 seconds, 5 seconds to Aaron Rodgers, he's going to beat you. If you only give him 2 seconds, he's a lot less likely to beat you bad. He may beat you with a short pass, but you slow down that offensive machine. And if one thing we've seen is that Green Bay Packers, unless they're doing some quick big strikes, they're not a slow plodding, move down the field, methodically offense. We're going to take big chunks of yards and we're just going to keep moving the ball. So I think you need another pass rushing specialist that's younger. I would love to see another defensive end, a 3-4 defensive end, not an outside linebacker, but an actual defensive end. I think Lamar Houston is perfect for that position, but I think you're going to need another legitimate guy to be over there. Because Jeremiah Ratliff's older. You're going to rotate him as nose tackle as well. You need a guy that can be in there and be the man. And you need another cornerback, because other than Kyle Fuller, you don't have much. Tim Jennings is an overpaid old man. And then you've got a bunch of late round picks. And you could use another safety, because Antrell Roll is a good stopgap, but you're going to have to develop somebody. But I moved that one a little bit further down than I have had it in previous years, because honestly, he's got a few years on him that he can play well. That just pushes that from a need to a want, because it moves down your priority list. If you find a really good safety that you can move in there quicker, you just displace Ryan Mundy at first and then let him kind of groom him into that position. Or it ends up being you can push it off till next year and it delays your time when you have to fill these holes. As if you can temporarily fill one, come back, and then more permanently replace it later down the road, you're in a better position than walking into the NFL draft going, all right, we have nobody at this position, we have nobody at this position, we have nobody at this position, and having to hit 3 home runs in the draft. Honestly, think about it. Who does that? You can't go out there and like, I need 5 starters in this draft to be competitive. It's not going to happen. You could be the best draft guru in the world, and you're not going to hit 5 home runs and have 5 starters that are NFL good quality starters. Just doesn't happen. But if you go in there and say, all right, well, I've plugged up my huge need at safety temporarily with Antrell Roll. I've temporarily plugged my need for this position with this guy. All it does is it delays your need for somebody else, or to fill that hole until a couple of years down the road. And that's a good position to be in. That allows you to draft the best player available. So where does that leave us as far as ranking them? As I said, you've got a lot of high-powered weapons. You saw what happened when they played a high-powered offense in New England. You saw what happened when they played a high-powered offense with Green Bay. You saw in the last preseason game what they did when they played Seattle. Those teams just steamrolled them. You need to get after that quarterback. So I'm going to put number one. You need an elite pass rusher at 3-4 outside linebacker. Pernell McPhee is good. You paid him good money. I think he's a guy who's on the upswing. I think he's a guy who can fill that role from for a while. But you need somebody that's also going to come in there and just be, he's going to be an animal and go after the quarterback that you have to plan against. Second, I think you need an inside linebacker. This is Chicago. Every single good defense we've ever had has been a cornerstone, has been the inside linebacker. Whether that be Dick Budkiss, Mike Singletary, Brian Urlacher, you need the good middle linebacker. And I think that's a huge priority, which sort of sucks because they don't have that guy in this draft. You could have had that guy last year, but you didn't. You drafted Kyle Fuller, who is perfectly fine, and I'm happy with that pick, but there isn't that guy that's a standout guy. Maybe somebody develops into that guy, but I don't see that guy in this draft. I think that's something you're going to have to plug in free agency until you can draft somebody. But you need an inside linebacker. Next, cornerback. Cornerback is, you need depth because they're going to throw 3-4 wide receivers at you in a package. Right now, you've got Kyle Fuller, who's good. Tim Jennings, who is not as good as we thought he was when we paid him that big money contract. And then you've got Demontre Hurst. You've got a host of guys that are mediocre. When you're playing against Megatron, when you're playing against Randall Cobb and guys like that, you need better cornerbacks. And this is a system that requires you to play more man press coverage. You're not going to be playing that zone where you can get away with a less athletic cornerback. Is you need to bring in guys that can play press coverage. You need at least one cornerback. Next, I'm going to go that fifth offensive line spot. Is this team, the defense is not going to be infinitely better. It's going to be better than it was last year, but it's not going to be a Seattle defense. It's not going to be a top-notch defense. It's going to be a middle-of-the-pack defense, if best. So you need to put up some points on the board. And we've all seen when Jay Cutler's under pressure, Jay Cutler makes a lot of mistakes, throws the ball away, throws interceptions, holds onto the ball, fumbles. And when there's pressure and the play breaks down, Jay Cutler breaks down. You need that fifth offensive lineman to make the whole offensive lineman as a line as a unit better. When you have a weak link in Jordan Mills, it makes everybody else weaker. You improve on that spot, whether that be kick Kyle Long out to tackle and then move a better guard in there, or a guard that's better than what you had at tackle, then that's what you do. But you need the five best offensive linemen out there. And right now they've got three good ones, one okay one, and one suspect one. And then that leads me to, we need a center, because Roberto Garza is not the answer at center, and I think they need a top-notch center. I think that's a key for a good offense. We need a wide receiver, and we need a defensive end, and not an outside linebacker, but an actual defensive end. I think we can get away with it this season with what we have. It's not going to be ideal, but I think you need a good, solid defensive end. And then you need a wide receiver because you got rid of Brandon Marshall, who was your best wide receiver. And I think you can easily replace him because there's a lot of guys in this draft. There's a lot of wide receivers in this draft. And you already went out and got one in free agency. So I moved it down as far as need. But if you can get a top-notch wide receiver, you're going to have a hell of a lineup. Sure, you lose Brandon Marshall, but if you replace him with an Amari Cooper or a Kevin White and an Eddie Royal, suddenly you just got better by getting rid of somebody. So what are some of the notes I've taken? Is I think the Bears are better off switching Kyle Long to being a tackle. I think under Mark Trestman's system, they felt that the guard was a much more important position than was the tackle. But most people think that the tackle is much more important. And I think I'm in that camp where I think the tackle position is much more important. I think you can get away with guard. I mean, when you have a bad guard, it makes it much tougher to run. But I think Kyle Long is a much better, he's going to be much better tackle than he is a guard, and I think he's a pretty good guard. So I think your best option is to kick him outside, and you've got some more competition at guard than you do at tackle, and you can mask that a little bit better. What do you do with Jared? Another point I have, what do you do with Jared Allen? I think he would be a fine offensive or outside linebacker in a 3-4. I think his weakness is playing against the run directly, and when you get a big offensive lineman on him, he's not the guy that can push him out of the way. He's got to use his speed and athleticism to get around him and make the play, and he's going to use his all the moves he's learned over the years, and you're not going to trick him. But if you put him in a position to be an outside linebacker and free him up a little bit and not have to have an offensive lineman right on him, is you're going to free him up to be able to rush the passer. And especially if you only put him in there on pass rushing downs, you take away that big weakness of running directly at him and let him pin his ears back and go after the quarterback. I think he's going to be all right. I think the big problem is presenting that to him. You bring in a new coach, a new head coach, he might not be able to tell that to a guy like Jared Allen. But you have a guy like Vic Fangio or a guy like John Fox come up to him and say, listen, we know you're not comfortable doing this. We know that's why you wanted to leave Minnesota. But trust us. Just come out there, trust us. And we're going to put you in the best position to make plays. Because the thing is he doesn't want to do something where he doesn't know he's good at it. And playing a 3-4 outside linebacker, he doesn't know what to expect. And you saw how it revitalized Julius Peppers' career. Part of it was he was playing under a bad Bears team and they weren't using him properly. But it did give him new life because you had an awesome outside linebacker in Clay Matthews. And then it gives him the freedom, gives Julius Peppers the freedom to be able to go after the quarterback and not have these, mongoloids, button up against him. It gave him a lot more freedom to go after the quarterback. My third note I wrote down was, what happens to Willie Young? I think he's too small to play that defensive end position. I think in a one gap system he might be able to work it, but I think I don't think he's athletic enough to be an outside linebacker. I don't think he's big enough to be a defensive end. And he was such a good player. I look for him to get traded on draft day. Is you move him, you free up a couple million dollars, and it gives you a draft pick. And it's just kind of a numbers thing. Like, I love Stephen Paya. I thought Stephen Paya was a hard worker, but I just don't know where he fits in that new defense. So then that leaves us with, what do we do to fill these holes? Which I come in with mock draft number one. So this is my mock draft I did today. And the way I do mock drafts is you could do like the Mel Kiper way, where I'm going to sit down and draft this guy and this guy. And I don't like doing that because it's not fair. I don't know enough about every other team and their needs and who their role players are and what their coaching staff is looking for to be able to properly evaluate. But what I do is I use simulator sites, and they list what the team needs are, and they rank players, and they sort of take them that way. And I use firstpick.com, and there's another one. I'm drawing a blank on what the site is. I have them saved as tabs on my computer. And so I do these two mock simulators, and they pick all the other teams. It lets me just focus on what the Bears are, and I can see who's already off the board, who's there. And so for me, ideally, who's there at the first pick is Leonard Williams. You're going to say, why Leonard Williams? And I'm going to tell you. What did I tell you was a huge need for the Bears? I said that defensive end position. And you're going to have Hub Arkish and Mullion Handley and all these other guys say that the defensive end position in a 3-4 is a not glorious position. You need a 300-pound man who's going to go in there and eat blocks and leave and let your defensive or your outside linebackers get the glory in the sacks. And I'm going to say bull crap. And I'm going to answer that by saying J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt is a 3-4 defensive end. J.J. Watt is the best pass rusher there is in the NFL right now. So don't tell me that you can't be a good pass rusher and be in that position. What that does is if you have a good pass rusher that plays that 3-4 defensive end, that's going to make your defensive line a hell of a lot tougher to block. So you put in, if you are able to get Leonard Williams, he is a phenomenal pass rusher. He's a freak athlete. And he's big enough to play that 3-4 defensive end. You put him there with Pernell McPhee, Lamar Houston, Ego Ferguson, and then you put him on that other side, and then put Jared Allen, and suddenly you just have a bunch of pass rushers that will get after the quarterback. I love Leonard Williams. I don't think he's going to fall enough to the Bears. The best I can hope for is that people fall in love with these defensive end / 3-4 outside linebackers. And there's some freak athletes that are in that mix. You got to hope that he just falls down to that seventh spot. You got to hope two quarterbacks go. You got to hope that Vic Beasley and Shane Ray and these other guys, they go and pushes down Leonard Williams, because I think he would be a great pick. But I don't think he falls. I think he fits too much into that Oakland freak athlete, where he's just a freak athlete at the position and they fall in love with him. I don't see him falling. So we go with mock draft 1.0 from Sean for 3:23:15. First round. I only did four rounds. I didn't 5-6. Just meh. It's going to be opinion who. It's going to be evaluating between some hopeful guys that are more likely going to be special teamers. So I'm just going to do four. I have. So like I said, right now you filled your holes, and is with something. You don't have any glaring need. Like, we don't have a single wide receiver that's a good starter. What you have is you filled your holes enough to put you in a position to draft the best player available. Best player available, if you are not drafting the best player available, you are losing. You are losing badly. You may hit luck and get a guy that fills that hole, but if you are drafting for need and not best player available, you're doing yourself a disservice and you are losing. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. You can ask every single winning GM head coach ever. They're going to tell you best player available because it's true. Now, that's not to say if you grade everybody out and you've got Andrew Luck as your quarterback and you're drafting, say, 25th, and your 25th best guy happens to be a quarterback and your 26th best guy happens to be a running back. You need a running back. That's fine. That's a different situation. So if you have two evenly matched guys as far as how you grade them out, and one is a position of need, then yeah, that's how you split those two up. But you don't reach down and go, we have the seventh pick. We need a nose tackle really bad, and pick a guy who should be drafted in the 20s and Danny Shelton, and pull him up and draft him at 7. You don't do that. That's losing football. You have to get an impact player at 7. So you may get a player that plays a position where you have a starter. Tough. You upgrade. Every position you try to upgrade. So I'm going Shane Ray, 3-4 outside linebacker, as my number one pick. And I'm going to tell you why. I think Leonard Williams is gone. Dante Fowler is an interesting pick, because I think he can play that pass rushing defensive end or outside linebacker. But Shane Ray is a freak athlete. He reminds me a lot of Clay Matthews. And I think when you draft him, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get a relentless, mean SOB that is lightning fast, strong as an ox. He's going to beat you off the ball, and he's going to make everybody better because you have to chip him. You cannot leave him one-on-one with a tackle or a running back or whatever you have to block him. And then you have Pernell McPhee on the other side, and then you have your other guys. It makes everybody better. Shane Ray is a great pick. Not my top choice because I really think Leonard Williams. I think it's easier to fill with a pass rusher on that outside. I think you have more defensive or your 3-4 outside linebackers to fill holes than you do defensive ends in your scheme. But I think Shane Ray is too elite to pass up. Second round, I went through this mock a couple times, and a couple times he's fallen to me. And I think this is a little bit of a stretch to get him in the second round, is Arik Armstead at play 3-4 outside linebacker. 3-4 defensive end. And he fits great. He's a big man. He can rush the passer. He's strong. I think he'd be a perfect pick. So in your first two picks, you shore up that whole defensive line. Third, you've got Cody Pruitt, who can play cornerback or safety. He's a versatile guy. I think he'd be a great pick at third. And then fourth is a wide receiver I really love out of Duke, is Jamison Crowder. I think he reminds me so much of Steve Smith. It's scary. He's powerful. He's not that tall. He's like 5'8". But I watched him go up against cornerbacks that were 6'2", 6'3", and he would go up and take that ball away. He used his strength and his agility to create a barrier between the guys, and he was physical with them. And because they were so much bigger, they were not going to call those penalties. I think he's phenomenal. I think he would be a fantastic fit for the Bears. And if he's there at fourth pick, that's a steal. And again, it may look a little bit like I drafted out of need rather than best player available, but that's not true because I went through several simulations, and there was a couple of them, and I'll go through ones that I had gone through just kind of a simulation just to show you where my thinking was. I did one with where Jameis Winston fell. I took Jameis Winston in the number 7 pick because he was the best player there. If Jameis Winston falls to you number 7, you don't care what your defensive needs are. You take Jameis Winston. I had another one where Shane Ray was gone, Leonard Williams was gone, Dante Fowler was gone. So I took Kevin White, the wide receiver. I did the same situation. I took Amari Cooper. The mock draft where I had Kevin White. And these were simulations, and I kind of went one with one that I felt was most realistic. So I did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 simulations, and I picked the one that I figured was the most realistic. But the first one I did, I picked Kevin White, wide receiver, first pick. Jake Fisher, offensive tackle, with the second pick. Cody Pruitt, defensive back, with the third pick. And TJ Yeldon, a running back, with the fourth pick. So 3 out of 4 picks were offense. And people are probably flipping out right now going, Sean, how could you pick? The defense was so bad. You picked 3 offensive linemen. Blah, blah, blah. You know what? That was the best players available. So you have Kevin White fits a great need at wide receiver. That really shores up, makes your offense better. Jake Fisher, an offensive tackle. You plug him in at right tackle, and suddenly your offensive line is their much, much better offensive line. So that's what I'm doing. My second mock is Shane Ray was gone. Leonard Williams was gone. I went Dante Fowler. I feel like he's a much safer pick than some of the other talented defensive ends. And then second round, I went Benardrick McKinney at inside linebacker. I'm not fully sold on him, but he was there in the second round. I think he was better than most people that are available. So you take him at second. Then I went Grasu, the center, at third pick. Picked the center. But he's a guy that can come in there day one, beat out Garza, and play there for 10 years. And then again, fourth pick, I got Jamison Crowder. The third simulation I did, I picked Amari Cooper first. Carl Davis, he would play probably a 3-4 defensive end in the second round. Free safety, Deron Smith. And then a center at B.J. Finney in the fourth pick. And then another one you'll hate, but I thought it was fantastic. It was absolutely amazing. And if this simulation, the reason I didn't choose this as my mock 1.0 is because it was too unrealistic. Is in this, so when you do these simulations, sometimes the magic happens and you have teams reach a little bit and a guy falls to you. And sometimes that happens in reality. Sometimes it happens in these simulations. But I felt it was too unrealistic to have it happen twice in two rounds. So first round, Jameis Winston falls to 7. I took Jameis Winston. My second pick comes. Todd Gurley is there. Todd Gurley didn't hurt himself. I think he was the most talented player in this draft. You have him at running back, and he is. Imagine if you had beast mode, and he could run like the wind, and he could run fast. That's who Todd Gurley is. He will run over you, and he will burn you, and he's just phenomenal. Todd Gurley's there in the second. I would absolutely get rid of Matt Forte if I needed to get free up that $8 million and to have Todd Gurley be my stud back. So it was Jameis Winston in the first, Todd Gurley in the second. And I ended up with Cody Pruitt in the third, and Jameson Crowder in the fourth. And then I came down to my last one, and that's the one I ended up going with because I felt that was the most realistic. If it was realistic as who's available, it's realistic and filling their holes as well. And like I said, if your best player available, it's not just, oh, hey, this guy is absolutely better than this guy because I ranked him fourth instead of fifth. It's you have guys in a block of area, and you sort of go, all right, is one guy that much better than the other one of the available players? If they're on par, you pick the position you need the most out of there, or the guy you think most likely have the biggest impact. So like I said, at number 7, there's going to be a lot of guys that can fill a hole for the Bears, but you want to pick somebody that's going to be the biggest impact. And I think Jameis Winston would be a huge impact because he lets you have the freedom to get rid of Jay Cutler next year, and he's a better quarterback. I think Leonard Williams gives you an impact because he lets you have that rare 3-4 defensive end that goes in there and gets after the quarterback. I think Shane Ray is an elite player too. I think there's some wide receivers that are impact players, but I think Shane Ray ranks ahead of them as far as who's going to have the biggest impact on your team. So I went Shane Ray. Arik Armstead is a guy that I think was very talented, should be a first rounder, late first rounder, fell to the early second round. You take him. So that's where we go. That's what I see. And based on some moves the Bears make, some pro days, some more things that come out about the draft, I will do a mock 2.0 next week. So that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. Thank you guys so much for listening. I had a couple of emails that I got, and I didn't get a chance to read them. But next time, I swear. So if you guys have questions, hit us up at swirskysports.com, Twitter at swirskysports, facebook.com/swirskysports, which we just broke 500 followers. Thank you guys so much. And also make sure you're checking out our sponsor, icehogs.com and audible.com/swirskysports to get a free audiobook. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the planes.
Bears, 31 to negative 7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down.